Coming up on Something Is About to Happen.
Until you have light in His Word, the light of the knowledge of the power of God, you will always count yourself off when Satan counts you down. My friend, if God said it, He'll make it good. If He spoke it, He will bring it to pass. Everything else you're going through will pass away. But God's purpose for your life, it will come to pass. If this is your word, I want you to shout, let there be light in my life. Help me and elbow about four or five people this morning and tell them, do you know of the power of light even in the midst of your darkness? According to Isaiah 43 and verse 5, He gives you treasure in darkness. So you look at you look at yourself, and it doesn't look like anything. Why doesn't it look like anything? Because God has made it look useless to you. Why? Because He's hiding you for a time appointed by the Father. So you can be so down and out and feel like nothing good can happen for my life. So down and out, feel like nothing's going to rise, nothing's going to happen. That's a lie from the pit of hell. But God doesn't care about that lie because it's a hiding place. If that's you and you're going through something that makes you feel kind of worthless, makes you feel kind of impotent to your tasks, your possibilities, makes you feel browbeaten, somewhat down and out, I want you to just look at three or four people and tell them, watch out for me. God is hiding me. I know I ain't driving what you're driving or living where you're living or counting what you're counting, but it's only because God is hiding me. I know I don't have the CEO job yet. I know I don't have your kind of paycheck. I know I don't got it going on like you do, but it's only because God is hiding me. I know that you see me as a pariah and as a proverb and perhaps even as a byword, but don't count me out yet, friend, because all of that is the hiding place for God's glory. I know that because of my circumstances, I look like least likely to make it. Most unlikely to win in life, but it might just be a hiding place. Big brother, I know that you've rejected me and kept me on the backside of the woods, and you were part of daddy's plan to renegade me to nothing, but you must understand that God has declared in His word, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I will show compassion to whom I will show compassion. It's not of him that wills nor of him that runs, but it's of God who shows mercy. And I will choose whoever I choose. And I can take him from the palace and raise him, or I can take him from the furnace and use him. And wherever I choose to use him, he cannot refuse. And no man born of a woman can ever prevent me from doing what I want to do in somebody's life. I can hide them so deep in the darkness, so deep in trouble. I can hide them so down, out, and under. I can see to it that they are broken by life's battering and life's adversities and assailants, and everybody will walk past them and think that nothing more can happen for this guy. No good can come out of his life or her life. But what the devil doesn't know, I control his own power. I allow him to do what he does, and if I don't, he can't do it. And sometimes I allow him to take you all the way down to the abyss, Joseph, so that when I raise you up, it is clear to everybody that was a contributor to his depth of abyss, his depth of trouble, that no man can stop what I choose to do in your life. And until you have light to see that as your reality, until you have light in his word, the light of the knowledge of the power of God, you will always count yourself off when Satan counts you down. But if God be God, and if he's the creator of the heavens and the earth, and if he's the owner of the universe, and if it is true that all power belongs to him, my friend, if God said it, he'll make it good. If he spoke it, he will bring it to pass. Everything else you're going through will pass away, but God's purpose for your life, it will come to pass. Now, if you don't believe it, act important and sit there and be cool and pristine. But if this is your word, I want you to shout, let there be light in my life. Because he hides you behind your troubles until the day of your showing and your shining. So if you have trouble and you have trials and you're going through tribulation, just recognize that it's a hiding place and it is temporary, and the longevity of that hiding place often determines the scale of your rising, so that you look unlikely and defeated to your enemy, but when God is good and ready, you are going to shine. That's when he now comes to the scene and says, arise and shine, because your darkness is over. The glory of God has risen upon you, and your light has now come. Can I say to somebody this morning, your light is going to come, and the glory of God, that means the exactness of the supernatural power of God that can do things that spirituality and natural wisdom cannot do, the supernatural glory of God is going to rise upon your life, and you'll be able to do things that you could never do before, go places you could never go before, own stuff that you did not know that you owned, and move in mastery that you did not know you could move in. Why? Because when the glory comes, my friend, you shine in the brilliance that exactly resembles the very likeness and the image of God himself. Earlier on here in the book of Luke chapter 4, Jesus is in the synagogue, and he took the Torah from the minister in charge and read the open Torah in the prophecy of Isaiah about his own messianic mission, thereby announcing from the writ, according to the prophecy of Isaiah, that he, Jesus, was the promised Messiah who would come to set captives free. He goes on to tell us that on this day in the synagogue, a daughter of Abraham meets with Jesus, the Messiah, who has come to set captives free. In that time, women were not allowed to go into the sanctuary of the synagogue, so he must have met her somewhere on exiting the sanctuary, on the grounds or in the campus where the synagogue was. And the text reports that her diagnosis is a spirit of infirmity. And this is a very general or generic diagnosis for a range of ailments that persons suffered in those times. It's a Hebraistic way of declaring that the cause for this ailment, as with other ailments, was because of a spiritual attack. It was a spirit of infirmity. And as you read further in the text, her condition is one of the few in the Gospels that is afforded a description of her malady. And he goes on to tell us that she was bowed over. And I'd like to see some images on the screen. If she wasn't merely just slightly bent, that happens with old age for many, but she was bent over to the point where her face was nearly in the ground. Her bending over was so painful to her that she was in constant pain all the time, and she couldn't turn her head, nor could she look at even a child face to face. It had maimed her in no small way. We don't know her age, but we know she's been in this condition for 18 years. It's been a mighty long time. Bent over from the waist down, bent over to the point that one version says that she was doubled over. Another version says she was crippled. Luke 13 verse 11 in the Amplified. And there was a woman over there who was 18 years, who for 18 years had had an infirmity caused by a spirit, a demon of sickness. She was bent completely forward and utterly unable to straighten herself up or to look upward. I practiced what it felt like to be her this morning for about 3 or 4 minutes. And I bent over and I tried to do stuff and talk to my staff, not being able to look them in the face. I felt like an idiot. I felt lower in self-worth than I've ever felt before. I tried to imagine this as a continuous condition, not for 18 minutes, not for 18 seconds, but for 18 months. Then I tried to consider what it would feel like for 18 years to have been in her condition. There was little that she could do, yet she made her way to the house of God. She made her way to where the presence of God was supposed to be manifest. She only sees down. She has never looked at a sunset. She's never looked at the stars. And if she wanted to look, she had to lie down and look up. Everywhere she goes, everybody's head was at least a half a meter taller than her head. She's never had a face-to-face conversation in 18 years with anybody. She's always on a lower level. And you may say, well, Pastor, I'm not bent over physically. And that's true. I don't see anybody here who's doubled over physically. But often in Scripture, metaphors in the physical are really voices to other aspects and areas of our life. So while she was bent over physically, you might be bent over in your character. You might be bent over in your finances. You might be bent over in your relationships. You might be crooked in your charisma. You might be cast out in your personality. You might be bent and crooked and twisted and crippled in another area of your life. This woman was like this in the synagogue for 18 years, and could not look up at the stars, could not see the moon at night, could never see the sun. She could never speak face to face to anybody. She's always looked down upon by others because of her condition that has doubled her over from her waist down. She is physically sick. Her physical condition left her in severe pain all the time. Spiritually, she's suffering this condition because she's under attack from a spirit of infirmity that has come from the region of darkness to oppress her. But what the enemy did not know is that God was hiding her in the enemy's evil intention as the recipient of a miracle that would bring great rejoicing and great grace to that region and greatness to the name of Christ the Messiah. She is a woman of faith. She is a daughter of Abraham. She is a believer in the faith of the Israelites. And this goes to tell us that you can be a Christian and still have severe problems. Can I get a witness from somebody? And look closely at the woman. When she meets Christ, he does not cast a devil out of her because she is not possessed by a devil. She is oppressed by a devil. A believer cannot be possessed by the enemy. He can only be attacked from the outside and be held in limitation and in bonds, not by possession, but by oppression. She is demon oppressed, but not demon possessed. When light shines on anything, it's going to bring you knowledge, and then you will get understanding. And when you have understanding, God will give you situations, challenges, opportunities to test your understanding, not for his benefit, but for your benefit. So anytime you're really in the Word of God, you're going to go through a mind-expanding experience, and therefore you become more effective in your faith, more effective in delivering your life purpose in a victorious, significant way. Darkness cannot stand the presence of light. When God shines the light on anything, it becomes so powerful. What you really need then is just light to shine on that thing. Whether you realize it or not, all the components for success are already there. It just takes a good cook to pull them together. Every fiery trial in your life is a sign that God, the chef of the universe, is cooking. It takes time for some things to work. It takes time for patience to work focus. It takes time for focus to work presence. It takes time for presence to bring revelation. It takes time for revelation to give you confidence. God, in the way he designs your life, designs you with load-bearing capacity, because load is a similar word to weight. Weight or weightiness is the word for glory. Not everybody can handle glory, because glory and your ability to handle it must be designed into your weight-bearing capacity. It's time for you to stand up and stand out. If you stand now, the light is going to make you a shining, brilliant light of glory. Stand up to the glory of a new dawn in your life. It's your time to shine. There may be many persons in this room this morning that are oppressed by the enemy in your finances, in your body, with one of your children. So one is doing really, really well, but the other is in a nasty place, a terrible condition. And just when that one comes out, the one that was doing well before ends up in worse trouble. And at the same time, it's costing you so much money that your finance, your economy is debilitated by these circumstances. Can I tell you something? You are dealing with the spirit of the enemy that has been launched against you, and God seemed to tie his hands, because God said, what the enemy intends for evil, I will use as a hiding place until the appointed time when I will break the bonds and I'll release you from the infirmity or the tragedy or the trauma, till you rise and shine, to know that had it not been for the Lord who was on your side, you would have been swallowed up. And that this thing you're going through, it's not to bring you to a terminus. It's not intended to kill you. It is for the glory of God. Do you not know, child of God, that your life is for the glory of God? So anything that happens to you is merely part of the process to glorify God. That through this, God will give you a testimony. Through your trial, he will give you triumph. Through your test, he will give you a testimony. Through your mess, he will grant you a message so that you can glorify him, not merely by mimicking the words of song leaders, but from a song that comes from your deliverance, from a message that comes from your mess, from triumph that arose from your season of tribulation. This year, you might pass through some more trials, but by next year, your trial will become triumph. Your test will be your testimony. Your mess will be your message. God is using that thing as a hiding place from which he will launch you as a weapon of mass destruction to the wily devices of the enemy. If you believe it, shout yes, somebody. And so she is physically sick. She's demon oppressed. There may be people in this room who are oppressed by spirits of disappointment, spirits of lethargy, spirits of heartbreak, spirits of anger or release, sometimes in clusters, sometimes one at a time. So that what you're dealing with today is because of a spiritual attack. And as a believer, you're not possessed by the enemy, you're being oppressed by a spirit from the enemy. Jesus himself said, in this world you will have tribulation. And it is because you are a child of God that the devil is driven to harass you, to attempt to torment you. This woman is not only physically sick, she is suffering from a spiritual attack that caused this sickness. But the result is that she also now has a social problem. She's the object of children's nasty jokes. You know how children can be? People pretend to not see her when she's around. And they walk out of her line of sight. She's a pariah, a proverb, a byword in the society. She's the fodder for children's insensitive jokes. She can't look up at people's faces. She's always looking straight into the ground at close quarters. Her self-worth must have been so afflicted that she knows she can't get married. She knows that she can't bear children. She knows that she probably will never be a mother. She knows that to be normal is not likely in her life because of her physical condition. Her beauty is gone. Her youth is gone. Her social charisma is void. Her personality that has potential for charisma because she's fearfully and wonderfully made, it's voided. She is in a form of darkness, whereas God has already made it possible for her to have victory and be normal like everybody else, but she cannot see it. Why? Because she's in darkness. She has been in this condition 18 years, and the longer the condition lasts, the deeper the darkness seems. She's been sick in this condition for 18 years, but what I admire about the woman is she was still in church. Ooh, Shagabaha. in this condition for 18 years, but she's still in church, severely infirmed by a crippling debilitation to her spinal column, where she's stuck with her head lower than her waist, but she's still in church. She's the object of scorn and scoffing of a community of religious people, but she's still in church. Hardly does anybody pay her any attention, but she's in church before the doors open. She's in the house of God, perhaps even before the leaders of the church. She's going through all kinds of hell and high water, but she's in church. She resembles some of you who are squatting in the home of somebody who's squatting in somebody else's home, but you're still in church, dancing and praising and giving God glory. Or some of you who've been jilted by your husband or your wife, you're going through a bitter divorce, but still in the house of God, broke, busted, and disgusted, and still you're tithing because you believe that God is still on your side. Though hell may be against you, you have hope still alive in your heart that one day, I don't know which days, and she's done this for 18 years, one day God will show for me. Can I tell you something? Most people would have left church after a few months of her condition. Most people would have begun from the house of God after a year or two of her condition. Not only would they have left the church, they would also have left God and tried another God, because this God in their minds doesn't work. What they don't understand is that delays are not denials. Pits are the road to the palace. Rejection from men is opportunity to be the chosen of the Lord. Most people would have given up on church, given up on God, and resigned themselves from what they were brought up to be and do. But this woman kept hope alive and seemed to know that if she kept on coming to the house of God, one day, if I keep coming, something is going to happen in my life, because you don't know which day a word from God will illuminate that area of darkness and change your life completely. Some of you here, it's the word that was preached in your church that set you loose in different areas, brought you up to experience the power and the glory of God. You can actually remember the day, this sermon, its title, who was sitting beside you, because it was a milestone, it was a Rubicon, it was a watershed moment in your life that you heard a particular word that changed your life forever. And this woman had probably had some kind of encounter like that, or heard of somebody's encounter, and she kept her hope alive that one day I'll hear a word. Somebody will say something to me. The oracle of God will speak, and my life that is so crooked, so twisted, so bent, will be straightened out. I'll find a straight path. My rough road will be made smooth. My crooked path will be made straight. My mountains will be belittled. My valleys will be exalted, and I will come out, and those who laughed at me for 18 years will rejoice with me for the rest of my life. They will know that if God be for you, who can be against you? If God is on your side, there is a day appointed for your victory. If you believe it, I want you to shout, let there be light in my life. But look at this woman. She's praising God, yet all of her savings are depleted. Look at you, worshiping God, yet you can't pay the rent, and you don't know how you're going to pay the bills. Look at you, still in the house of God, serving diligently as if nothing went wrong, but you don't know how you're going to survive the lenders coming to retract their mortgage. Or you don't know how you're going to pay the school fees next term, because all hell has broken loose in your life, but you are like clockwork in the house of God. Look at me, friends. Sooner or later, you believe that God will come to rescue you, and that's why you're in church. And normally, the place where he rescues you is under the sound of his voice. In verse 12 of the 13th chapter of Luke, we read carefully and we see three powerful points, which will be the remaining emphasis of my discourse with you this morning. And the first is that the Bible said, when Jesus saw her. That's the first one. It was Jesus who saw her. It was Jesus who saw her. Who is this Jesus that saw her? Seeing her was important, but before we get to that importance, let's deal with Jesus. It wasn't the bishop that saw her. It wasn't the metropolitan senior pastor. It wasn't the cardinal or the papacy's chief adjutant, nor the papal or the papal man himself. It wasn't the ruler of the synagogue who saw her. It wasn't the pastor. It wasn't the head of the missionary board. It wasn't the leader of the diaconate. It was Jesus. For where man cannot do it, God will most often do what men cannot do. It was Jesus. John 9 and verse 5. He declares to them that as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. In John 1 and verse 5, he tells us, in him was life, and that life was the light of men. In other words, his advent in a human body was not his first going forth into the earth. He was the voice that spoke in creation at the beginning. All the other prophets saw him as a lamb, saw him as an animal, saw him as a firstborn. But it was Isaiah who told us he was a man. But it was John the Baptist who pointed out the man and said, behold, the Lamb of God that taketh away the sin of the world. And here we are. We beheld him in that time, and we saw him as very God, a very God.
Next week on Something Is About to Happen.
Everything you need God to do, Jesus did it on the cross. And after he did it, he went to join the Father above in the heavens at his right hand in a place called rest. God works before he starts. He has done all the work and it is settled. So when you pray to him, God, please do this for me, he's not going to get up from his chair to do anything. All he's going to do is release the angels by a look, a blink, show that girl some light. Shine the light on what he cannot see, because all he can see is the plight and the pain of his problem. So he's sensitive to his problem and he's insensitive to what I've already done.